David Stockman, former director of the Office of Management and Budget under President Ronald Reagan, noted, "We have a massive bubble everywhere, from Japan to China, Europe to the UK. As a result of this, I think world financial markets are extremely dangerous, unstable, and subject to serious trouble and dislocation in the future. I can tell you, as someone who absolutely aced academic mathematics in my younger years, that the global economy is headed for a disastrous debt collapse," avowed Mike Adams, editor of Natural News, a popular website covering health and politics that boasts more than 5 million visitors monthly. Trillions of dollars of asset valuation in derivatives will vanish, literally overnight. Widespread economic destruction will strike humanity like 1,000 hurricanes hitting major population centers all across the world, all simultaneously. The timing of this is impossible to predict, but its inevitability is not. What really alarms me about all this is knowing in advance that this event will usher in a global wave of poverty and destitution that is unprecedented in all of human history. This is going to put honest, hard-working people on the streets, living in destitution through no fault of their own, and the mere awareness of knowing this is coming causes me tremendous pain. Even worse, you and I can't save them all. We can only teach people to get prepared and hope they have the wisdom to listen. We cannot make their decisions for them, and we cannot alter the laws of economic reality, which dictate a global day of reckoning. Several observers of the social scene have compared the decline of the American Empire to that of ancient Rome, noting that while the Roman authorities pacified the masses with free bread and circuses filled with fighting gladiators, the American public is provided low-cost processed food and fights on television. Internet commentator Jack Curtis, a frequent contributor to the website American Thinker, writes that America is running out of money, borrowed from its pressured citizens, kids, and grandkids via Federal Reserve quantitative easing games. "Nobody can live on promises forever," noted Curtis. Stock markets and banks will shortly exhale the funny money hot air sustaining them. Interest rates will start their climb back to normal, and the government will defund first its war machine and foreign bribe programs, then its welfare beneficiaries. As with the old Romans, American military will decline, along with cradle-to-grave social welfare. The American citizens are likely to see change, more change than they expected their president had in mind. Food stamps will be cut, and huge salaries will disappear from pro sports. As that financial wave crests and begins to recede, America won't be an empire anymore. It will have everything it can handle, just tending to its own business. Michael T. Snyder, publisher of the Economic Collapse blog, foresees a great storm coming to America in the near future in the form of a takeover by China. Chinese acquisition of U.S. businesses set a new all-time record in 2013, and it is on pace to absolutely shatter that record this year. Meanwhile, China is voraciously gobbling up real estate and is establishing economic beachheads all over America. If China continues to build economic power inside the United States, it will eventually become the dominant economic force in thousands of small communities all over the nation. And it is important to keep in mind that there is often not much of a difference between the Chinese government and Chinese corporations. In 2011, 43% of all profits in China were produced by companies that the Chinese government had a controlling interest in. Devi Kidd, a federal government whistleblower, two-time congressional candidate, and author of Why a Bankrupt America, has written that an outlaw Congress has destroyed our most important job sectors, industrial, manufacturing, and agriculture, via destructive, unconstitutional free trade treaties, turning America into a dying service economy. It must be reversed, but Americans are going to go through hell before that can be accomplished. The arrogant and ignorant in the 50 state capitals have refused to implement a constitutional sound money law, she said. So many of us warned until the expletive hit in August 2008, but the masses didn't listen, and they still aren't listening. The very worst is closing in on us, and when it finally hits, as it did in 2008, what's going to happen? Social breakdown? Yes. Food riots. I believe we'll see that in certain parts of the country because, one, people are broke and empty bellies make for angry mobs, and two, there are serious problems with our food and water supplies. Brandon Smith, founder of the Barter Network Alternative Market Project, in a 2014 article entitled, "The Final Swindle of Private American Wealth Has Begun," stated, "The financial crash of 2008, the same crash which has been ongoing for years, is not, emphasis in the original, an accident. It is a concerted and engineered crisis meant to position the U.S. for currency disintegration and the institution of a global basket currency controlled by an unaccountable, supranational governing body like the International Monetary Fund, IMF. The American populace is being conditioned through economic fear to accept the institutionalization of global financial control and the loss of sovereignty." Such critics are not the only ones who see a bleak future for America. A recent study sponsored in part by NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center predicted a collapse of Western industrial civilization in the near future because of increasing income inequality along with unsustainable exploitation of resources. According to this study, the rise and fall of civilizations is a recurrent historical cycle in which precipitous collapses, often lasting centuries, have been quite common. The independent research project was conducted by a team of natural and social scientists under a NASA grant and was accepted for publication in the peer-reviewed Elsevier journal, Ecological Economics, which covers both ecology and human economics. Looking at such factors as population, climate, water, agriculture, and energy in the decline and fall of past civilizations, researchers were able to correlate their findings with the world today. They found the two crucial factors leading to collapse to be depletion of natural resources and the economic stratification of society into elites and masses, or commoners. In words that recall the grievances publicized by the Occupy movement, the study found fault not only with the pillaging of resources by wealthy capitalists, but also observed that accumulated surplus is not evenly distributed throughout society, but rather has been controlled by an elite. The mass of the population, while producing the wealth, is only allocated a small portion of it by elites, usually at or just above subsistence levels. Unsurprisingly, the study found that commoners are more likely to both see the abuse of resources and seek action to equalize income distribution than the wealthy elite, who are either oblivious to this catastrophic trajectory or in support of doing nothing. Dr. Nafiz Ahmed, executive director of the Institute for Policy Research and Development and author of A User's Guide to the Crisis of Civilization and How to Save It, concluded, "The NASA-funded Human and Nature Dynamical, Handy model, namely, that wealth distribution today is unequally divided between haves and have-nots, offers a highly credible wake-up call to governments, corporations and business, and consumers to recognize that business as usual cannot be sustained and that policy and structural changes are required immediately. A collapse due to social pressures may prove slow in coming. Other possibilities could be quick and varied. These include the setting off of an EMP, electromagnetic pulse weapon, terrorist attacks in cities, a nuclear war, a national truckers' strike, civil war, a cyber attack on computer systems, geophysical disasters such as the eruption of the Yellowstone caldera, and even an asteroid strike from space. Drought conditions and lack of water also have the potential to be catastrophic, accelerating an agricultural collapse resulting in mass starvation. Even NBC News reported on a looming crisis over water being drained from the Ogallala Aquifer, a 10-million-year-old underground water source stretching from South Dakota to Texas that supplies irrigation to an 8-state agricultural region. The scope of this mounting crisis is difficult to overstate, wrote Brian Brown. The high plains of Texas are swiftly running out of groundwater supplied by one of the world's largest aquifers, the Ogallala. A study by Texas Tech University has predicted that if groundwater production goes unabated, vast portions of several counties in the southern high plains will soon have little water left in the aquifer to be of any practical value. The worsening water situation in California, as detailed previously, only adds to the problem. With all of these disturbing indicators, AltMarket.com blogger Brandon Smith believes a second American Revolution is inevitable. What frightens the establishment most, I think, is that the American people have become active participants in their own national environment once again. Emphasis in the original. Smith wrote, "At Nevada rancher Cliven Bundy's ranch, they stopped asking for mercy. They stopped begging the system to police itself. They stopped waiting for the rigged elections, and they stopped relying on useless legal avenues to effect change. Rather, they took matters into their own hands and changed the situation on the ground on their own. For oligarchy, this development is unacceptable because one success could lead to many. For at least the past 4 years, our government has been quietly maneuvering toward martial law. It's been happening for much longer, if you count George W. Bush's Presidential Decision Directive 51, which has yet to be fully declassified. This directive, part of the Continuity of Operations Plan, details how the executive branch agencies of the government could take control and maintain federal authority during a declared national emergency. Critics say the directive gives the president dictatorial powers and eliminates the last roadblocks to declaring martial law. As in the past, when faced with an increasingly non-compliant citizenry, the global elite turns to war as a means of distracting the public, solidifying political control through patriotism and damping down social movements, while at the same time increasing the profits of their corporate holdings. While even the globalists are hesitant to provoke another world war, as the massive release of nuclear weapons could spell doom for the entire planet, they are not above stimulating localized warfare across the world, particularly in the volatile Middle East. California internet commentator Richard Scheck noted that facts found in the corporate mass media reveal that a Leviathan has emerged at the dawn of the new millennium, reflecting the vision of 1984 and the warning of President Eisenhower to beware of the military-industrial complex. He echoed the thoughts of many by contending that factions within Western intelligence agencies control so-called terrorist groups and use them to perpetrate a strategy of tension and clash of civilizations to support partisan political positions. PSYOP. Psychological operations programs such as Operation Gladio, codename for a NATO plan to leave behind anti-communist assets in the event of a Soviet invasion of Europe during the Cold War, and reliance on paramilitary groups to continue Cold War efforts designed to defeat world communism, which is currently replaced in Orwellian fashion by radical Islam, soon to be followed by China. The public is confused and manipulated by wag-the-dog type events such as OKC, the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, Madrid, and London. Factions within various intelligence agencies acting on behalf of vast banking, corporate, and criminal drug enterprises exploit the rhetoric of radical groups in false flag operations designed to terrorize the populace while conveniently shifting blame to the demonized group. This allows cabal members to acquire more power and expand their domination over all agencies of government by centralizing power. Homeland Security and the new National Intelligence Agency. In this fight for the future, we are close to a tipping point where a perfect storm of tribal, economic, political, religious, and environmental factors will force everyone to awaken to the crisis at hand. We are all increasingly becoming participants in War of the Worlds type scenarios as people are impacted by the consequences of peak oil, global warming, economic globalization, and international terrorism. How we learn to live with the Leviathan and respond to the difficult tests that lie ahead will determine the fate of our children and the shape of the world they inherit. Scheck recalled the Founding Fathers' warning against foreign entanglements. "Those forgetting that are the real traitors to our heritage and have ruined this country in their drive for Pax Americana and global hegemony," he wrote. Up to today, vast numbers of Americans have largely accepted the military adventures indulged by Washington because they retained a patriotic trust in their government. Such trust has succeeded so far in preventing a major societal collapse. Ever since the issue of federal dominance over the states was decided in 1865, Americans have been taught to trust their government. Yet this trust has begun to erode. Professor Henry Giroux is an award-winning professor who taught at universities in Boston and Miami and the author of Neoliberalism's War on Higher Education and Zombie Politics in the Age of Casino Capitalism, among more than 50 titles. Giroux questions why so many citizens trust the government to protect them in the first place. He wonders, why should anyone trust a government that has condoned torture, spied on at least 35 world leaders, supports indefinite detention, places bugs in thousands of computers all over the world, kills innocent people with drone attacks, promotes the post office to log mail for law enforcement agencies, and arbitrarily authorizes targeted assassinations? Or for that matter, a president that instituted the Insider Threat Program, which was designed to get government employees to spy on each other and turn themselves and others in for failing to report breaches, which includes any unauthorized disclosure of anything, not just classified materials. Some say this program was designed to turn government employees, such as your postman, into an army of snitches. The Rutherford Institute's John W. Whitehead, in recalling how the people of Stalin's Soviet Union and Hitler's Germany blindly followed government officials, explained such blind trust in government thusly. Unfortunately, we the people have become so trusting, so gullible, so easily distracted, so out of touch, so compliant, and so indoctrinated to the idea that our government will always do the right thing by us, that we have ignored the warning signs all around us, and not asking the right questions, demanding satisfactory answers, and holding our government officials accountable to respecting our rights and abiding by the rule of law has pushed us to the brink of a nearly intolerable state of affairs. At least to those who remember what it was like to live in a place where freedom, due process, and representative government actually meant something. Others ask how one can trust a government that is preparing for internal strife, even a collapse of society, because it would appear that the United States government is doing just that. Beginning in 2008, at the outset of the financial crisis, the Department of Defense showed concern over the possibility of national collapse by funding universities to initiate studies to improve DOD's basic understanding of the social, cultural, behavioral, and political forces that shape regions of the world of strategic importance to the U.S. This program, entitled the Minerva Research Initiative, basically is designed to predict and prepare for social collapse across the globe, to include the United States. The Guardian said the program was designed to model the dynamics, risks, and tipping points for large-scale civil unrest across the world, under the supervision of various U.S. military agencies. The project will determine the critical mass, tipping point, of what are called social contagions by studying their digital traces in the cases of social unrest such as the 2011 Egyptian Revolution, the 2011 Russian Duma elections, the 2012 Nigerian fuel subsidy crisis, and the 2013 Gezi Park protests in Turkey. The titles of projects funded by the initiative avoid words like collapse, rioting, and civil war, preferring to mask this research with such headings as tracking critical mass outbreaks in social contagions, deterrence with proxies, using new approaches to measure and model state fragility, a computational assessment of social disequilibrium and security threats, and understanding the origin, characteristics, and implications of mass political movements. But the intent of the program is clear: to identify anti-government sentiment, pinpoint any activist leaders, and devise ways to suppress government dissent. Many of the projects are geared toward foreign nations, particularly in Asia and the Third World. In 2014, Congress authorized a total budget of $17.8 million for the Minerva Initiative. However, the final program is expected to cost the taxpayers $75 million over a five-year period. Critics of the program include the American Anthropological Association, AAA, which complained that the Pentagon lacks the kind of infrastructure for evaluating anthropological and social science research in a manner involving rigorous, balanced, and objective peer review. In a letter to the U.S. government, the AAA stated, Pentagon officials will have decision-making power in deciding who sits on the panels, and that there remain concerns within the discipline that research will only be funded when it supports the Pentagon's agenda. David Price, a professor of cultural anthropology at St. Martin's University in Washington, D.C., is author of Weaponizing Anthropology, Social Science in Service of the Militarized State. He has been critical of the Pentagon's Human Terrain Systems, HTS, program, which is designed to embed social scientists in military field operations, applying society-altering theories to military nation-building activities. Price notes the HTS training scenarios adapt counterinsurgency tactics used in Iraq and Afghanistan for use in the USA, where the local population is seen from the military perspective as threatening the established balance of power and influence, and challenging law and order. Such public studies concern citizens already aroused over the militarization of police and the federal government's stockpiling of arms and ammunition. One particularly disturbing study in 2013, entitled Who Does Not Become a Terrorist, equated peaceful activists with armed militants. Study material stated, this project is not about terrorists, but about supporters of political violence. Guardian reporter Nafiz Ahmed queried Pentagon officials, activism, protest, political movements, and of course NGOs are a vital element of a healthy civil society and democracy. Why is it that the DOD is funding research to investigate such issues? Ahmed said he received no clear answer. Rutherford Institute founder Whitehead questioned the militarization of government agencies not known for firefights, viewing it as evidence that the federal government is preparing for a societal collapse. He noted a buildup in recent years of SWAT teams within non-security-related federal agencies, such as Department of Agriculture, the Railroad Retirement Board, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Office of Personnel Management, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Education Department. He further asked why at least 73 federal agencies under the command of Homeland Security or the Justice Department require approximately 120,000 full-time armed officers with arrest authority. What's with all of the government agencies stockpiling hollow-point bullets? For example, why does the Department of Agriculture need 40-caliber semi-automatic submachine guns and 320,000 rounds of hollow-point bullets? For that matter, why do its agents need ballistic vests and body armor? Whitehead asked. Why does the Postal Service need assorted small arms ammunition? Why did the DHS purchase 1.6 billion rounds of hollow-point ammunition, along with 7,000 fully automatic 5.56 by 45 millimeter NATO personal defense weapons, plus a huge stash of 30-round high-capacity magazines? That's in addition to the FBI request for 100 million hollow-point rounds. The Department of Education, IRS, the Social Security Administration, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which oversees the National Weather Service, are also among the federal agencies which have taken to purchasing ammunition and weaponry in bulk. In mid-2015, a multi-state military exercise called Jade Helm 15 involved not only special operations units such as the Army's Green Berets, Navy SEALs, and Air Force Special Ops, but also law enforcement agencies. Participants were to practice infiltrating both urban and rural areas to identify and detain citizens thought to be resistant to government demands. The fact that Texas, Utah, and Lower California are listed as hostile states prompted concerns that the exercise not only violated the 1878 Posse Comitatus Act, restricting the use of the military to police U.S. citizens, but was a forerunner to martial law. In early June 2014, an incident took place in Houston that might presage a coming collapse in America. When a 23-year-old woman was killed in a traffic accident, bystanders looted her car of groceries, even as her two injured children sat inside it. Police said the woman lost control of her Toyota 4Runner after being clipped by another car while backing out of a private drive. She hit a tree and was pronounced dead at the scene. Her sons, ages 4 and 6, were in the back seat and were transferred to a hospital with broken bones, but no life-threatening injuries. Witnesses told police they saw people steal groceries out of the dead woman's SUV. Although it was not clear if the looting took place before or after the woman's body and the children were removed from the wreck. It is most probable that the theft occurred before emergency personnel arrived. One witness told newsmen, "Why would you take somebody's stuff who got hit by a car? That's crazy, that's mean." But a nearby resident, Savannah Roberts, said she was not surprised by the looting. "There is a lot of people you just can't trust," she said. "I've seen worse in this area." What worries some even more than the scarcity of food is the thought that some multinational corporation, Monsanto comes to mind, might one day have the power to shut down the world's food supply without notice. Already having been the object of worldwide protests over toxic chemicals such as Agent Orange, PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, and dioxin, many critics are fearful of Monsanto's reach for control of the world's food supply through its proprietary seeds and GMOs. Today, more than 40% of all U.S. crop acreage use Monsanto products, and the company owns more than 1,600 patents on seed, plant, and other related commodities. Food and Water Watch, a nonprofit group with 15 U.S. offices that is dedicated to safe, accessible, and sustainable food and water, produced a paper in 2013 entitled "Monsanto: A Corporate Profile." According to this paper, in the United States alone, nearly all, 93% of soybeans and 4/5, 80% of corn, were grown with seeds containing Monsanto GMOs. Monsanto's leading products include Roundup and Harness herbicides, DeKalb corn seeds, Asgro soybean seeds, Delta Pine cotton seeds, Seminis and De Reuter vegetable seeds, and insect repellent SmartStax corn and Bollgard cotton. The company's power and influence affects not only the U.S. agricultural industry, but also political campaigns, regulatory processes, and the structure of agriculture systems all over the world, noted the paper. Supreme Court rulings in 1980 and 2001 have allowed the patenting of living organisms, leading to the development of what are termed terminator seeds, crop seeds that will not reproduce the next growing season. What was once a freely exchanged and renewable food source has been privatized and monopolized. In less than 3 decades, a handful of multinational corporations have engineered a fast and furious corporate enclosure of the first link in the food chain, stated the Food and Water Watch report. Although Monsanto insists that it would never commercialize terminator seeds, depriving farmers of new crop seeds or simply producing seeds not engineered to produce a full crop could cause worldwide famine. Such a dastardly scheme also would fit quite nicely with the broader globalist population control agenda. Any crisis in the food supply could certainly initiate chaos of such magnitude that the public would cry out for martial law, especially in the large cities where hungry mobs of looters could overrun police forces. Most citizens today cannot imagine such a possibility because they are psychologically affected by a phenomenon known as normalcy bias, whereby people fail to recognize or underestimate the possibility of disaster. Most people tend to believe that whatever they experience on a day-to-day basis is normal and that things will stay that way. Such bias prevents them from considering the ramifications of current trends. As a practical example, most of us suffer under the normalcy bias delusion that when you turn on the faucet in the kitchen, water will always come out, explains Mike Adams. We've seen this happen so many times that we now take it for granted and believe it will always happen, almost as if by magic. Even though humans living 200 years ago would have been shocked to see clean water coming out of a kitchen faucet, today we are shocked if it doesn't come out. That's normalcy bias. Obviously, if the citizens of the death culture hope to survive and flourish in the future, both their mindset and behavior must change. changing the game. What can citizens do to prevent the possibility of a future of privation and tyranny? What can be done on an individual level to make life better, to change the game? After viewing the egregious missteps of modern American society, what might be done to advance ideas and philosophies that could correct past mistakes? What can engender a more peaceful and prosperous nation? As author Alain de Botton notes, the problem with facts is not that we need more of them, but that we don't know what to do with the ones we have. The news media spews out an avalanche of facts each day, but what do these facts really mean? What should be laudable in a news organization is not a simple capacity to collect facts, but a skill honed by intelligent bias at teasing out their relevance, writes de Botton. We need news organizations to help our curiosity by signaling how their stories fit into the larger themes on which a sincere capacity for interest depends. In today's topsy-turvy America, when considering what needs to be fixed and how, one faces a number of puzzling contradictions. A list of conundrums passed around the internet in 2014 was repeated by commentator and a decorated former Army Lieutenant Colonel, Alan West, in his website column. Here are six conundrums of socialism that West says pretty much sum up the USA in the 21st century. 1. America is said to be capitalist and greedy, yet half of the population is subsidized. 2. Half of the population is subsidized, yet they think they are victims. 3. They think they are victims, yet their representatives run the government. 4. Their representatives run the government, yet the poor keep getting poorer. 5. The poor keep getting poorer, yet they have things that people in other countries only dream about. 6. They have things that people in other countries only dream about, yet they want America to be more like those other countries. West went on to note other contradictions in American society. He pointed out that Americans are advised to not judge all Muslims by the actions of a few lunatics, but we are encouraged to judge all gun owners by the actions of a few lunatics. Emphasis in the original. He said it seems we constantly hear about how Social Security is going to run out of money. How come we never hear about welfare or food stamps running out of money? Asked West. What's interesting is the first group worked for their money, but the second group didn't. Finally, West, a veteran of the conflict in Iraq, pondered, why are we cutting benefits for our veterans, no pay raises for our military, and cutting our army to a level lower than before World War II, but we are not stopping the payments or benefits to illegal aliens? Am I the only one missing something? Maybe, just maybe, the answer rests with smaller government. Change must begin at the local level, as the corruption and ambitions in Washington are beyond quick remedy. Initially, there must be changes in both public and private attitudes toward government, the corporations, and toward each other. New ideas for the better use of energy, communications, transportation, and healthcare must be developed. People in America must understand that while no one can prevent banks from collapsing or ensure that a home can be sold for what it originally cost, there are some measures that can be taken to provide some protection in a chaotic future. A good rule of thumb might be, hope for the best, but plan for the worst. If at all possible, move out of the city. Buy farmland with access to water. A farm with a year-round spring may be worth more than gold in the coming years. Those hoping for security in the U.S. dollar or with savings accounts, stocks, and bonds could lose their shirts in the event of a financial system meltdown. Diversification may be the key to survival. This may be the time to trade in paper dollars for real assets such as land, tractors, medical supplies, precious metals, ammo, food, and so on. One California family has provided an example of what can be accomplished by changing priorities. At a time when the federal government is run by multinational corporations and the general public is zombified by processed food and TV, this family has worked to become largely self-sufficient by transforming a small backyard garden into a productive microfarm. Jules Dervais, along with his son Justin and his two daughters, Anais and Jordan, live in a 1,500-square-foot bungalow on 1/5 of an acre on the edge of Los Angeles. In their small garden, they grow 350 different vegetables, herbs, fruits, and berries. The sustainable plot is complete with chickens, ducks, rabbits, goats, and honeybees. For 2 years in a row, they were able to produce 6,000 pounds of food. Hailed as one of the most independent family units in the country, the Derveses have progressively reduced their environmental impact and provided a sterling model for living sustainably and simply in an urban setting. 90% of their vegetarian diet comes from the homestead, and 2/3 of their energy is solar. Biodiesel fuel is made from used vegetable oil. Their radio operates by a hand crank. While they consume most of the food they produce, the Derveses sell any excess to local individuals and businesses. Profits are used to purchase basics like flour and rice. Derves says his family has demonstrated how individuals need not rely on a centralized authoritarian system to live a productive and rewarding life. Government can't do it, and corporations won't do it, he explains, adding with some humor that his family is in danger of being free. More and more people are joining the Derves family and breaking with the status quo of America. They are moving out of congested cities and buying small farms, returning to the land to raise their families and their own healthy food. Those who cannot leave the city are becoming self-sufficient by cultivating backyard gardens. Still others are shopping at farmers markets and turning to organic products in an effort to avoid the deficiencies of processed, mass-produced food. Society cannot long survive when food is no longer nutritious or when it contains poisonous substances. Supporting local markets not only helps struggling farmers, but guarantees a healthy diet. In many areas, food cooperatives are providing nutritious foods to members. If no food co-op is near you, form one by making contact with producers in your area. As the Boy Scout motto states, be prepared. This does not mean that everyone should become a survivalist with massive stockpiles of food, water, and ammunition. It only means that any prudent person should hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Even the federal government, in the form of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, recommends that every family have a basic emergency kit, also known as a bug-out bag. The FEMA website encourages everyone to be prepared for an emergency situation. You may need to survive on your own after an emergency, acknowledges the site. This means having your own food, water, and other supplies in sufficient quantity to last for at least 72 hours. Local officials and relief workers will be on the scene after a disaster, but they cannot reach everyone immediately. You could get help in hours, or it might take days. Additionally, basic services such as electricity, gas, water, sewage treatment and telephones may be cut off for days or even a week or longer. Your supplies kit should contain items to help you manage during these outages. FEMA recommends accumulating the following basic supplies. Water, 1 gallon of water per person per day for drinking and sanitation. Food, at least a 3-day supply of non-perishable food. Battery-powered radio, and a NOAA weather radio with tone alert and extra batteries for both. Flashlight and extra batteries. First aid kit. Whistle to signal for help. Infant formula and diapers if you have an infant. Moist towelettes, garbage bags, and plastic ties for personal sanitation. Dust mask or cotton t-shirt to help filter the air. Plastic sheeting and duct tape to shelter in place. Wrench or pliers to turn off utilities. Can opener for food, if kit contains canned food. FEMA also advises citizens in cold weather climates to prepare for low temperatures with sleeping bags, coats, and other warm clothing. Over and above basic survival preparation, thoughtful people should plan for a situation in which medical services are either overcrowded or simply unavailable. Instruction books on first aid and home and herbal remedies should be kept on hand. If a family member requires prescription medicine, a supply should be kept in reserve. Citizens must be prepared to take responsibility for themselves and their family rather than count on help from the medical and pharmaceutical establishments. For those desiring to take control over their own health, the website NaturalCuresNotMedicine.com points out that today there exists an almost limitless library, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to anyone with a passion for reading. Never has so much free material been available. Today there are more than 100 websites filled with a wide variety of e-books, ranging from literary classics to how-to instructions. Robert David Steele, a former Deputy Director of Marine Intelligence and CIA case officer, advocates open-source intelligence, that is, information derived from public sources. Steele founded the Open Source Solutions Network, Inc., and later the nonprofit Earth Intelligence Network, which supports the Public Intelligence blog. Americans today, according to Steele, are lacking in public intelligence, in knowing what one needs to know in order to make honest decisions for the good of all, rather than corrupt decisions for the good of the few due to distraction and misdirection by the corporate mass media. Steele, in the spirit of the Be Prepared, says, "I'm a former spy, and I believe we still need spies and secrecy, but we need to redirect the mass majority of funds now spent on secrecy towards savings and narrowly focused endeavors at home. Believe it or not, 95% of what we need for ethical evidence-based decisions support cannot be obtained through the secret methods of standard intelligence practices. But it can be obtained quite openly and cheaply from academics, civil society, commerce, governments, law enforcement organizations, the media, all militaries, and non-governmental organizations. An open-source agency, as I've proposed it, would not just meet 95% of our intelligence requirements, it would do the same at all levels of government and carry over by enriching education, commerce, and research. It would create what I called in 1995 a smart nation." According to Steele, most of our problems today can be traced to unilateral militarism, virtual colonialism, and predatory capitalism, all based on force and lies and encroachment on the common good. The national security state works for the City of London and Wall Street. Both are about to be toppled by a combination of Eastern alternative banking and alternative international development capabilities, and individuals who recognize that they have the power to pull their money out of the banks and not buy the consumer goods that subsidize corruption and the concentration of wealth. The opportunity to take back the commons for the benefit of humanity as a whole is open, here and now. Just such a move may have begun in 2015 when 57 nations joined the China-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, AIIB, over the objections of the U.S. government. The AIIB was expected to compete with the Anglo-American-run World Bank and International Monetary Fund. Noting that during the past few decades, populations who had spent centuries evolving away from slavery were reduced to marketable commodities by the industrial era. In his 2012 book, The Open Source Everything Manifesto, Steele said communities must reject concentrated, illicitly aggregated, and largely phantom wealth in favor of community wealth defined by community knowledge, community sharing of information, and community definition of truth derived in transparency and authenticity, the latter being the ultimate arbiter of shared wealth. Steele joined many others today in calling for an end to national diktat and instead the emergence of bottom-up clarity, diversity, integrity, and sustainability. Across America, a growing number of citizens feels the federal government is out of control. True freedom and liberty must begin with individuals at the local level. Individual towns across the USA are now nullifying federal and state regulations. For example, gag laws on animal cruelty, blanket permissions for fracking, noted Steele. Top-down power has failed in a most spectacular manner, and bottom-up consensus power is emergent. "Not in my neighborhood" is beginning to trump, "because I say so." The one unlimited resource we have on the planet is the human brain. The current strategy of 1% capitalism is failing because it is killing the golden goose at multiple levels. Unfortunately, the gap between those with money and power and those who actually know what they are talking about has grown catastrophic. The rich are surrounded by sycophants and pretenders whose continued employment demands that they not question the premises. Another thing individuals can do is communicate with local news media. Let them know when they do something good for the community and, more importantly, let them know when you are displeased with the coverage, or lack thereof, of a news event. Send them important news items from the alternative media and ask why they are not covering such important topics. Hold them to their word when they boast they have the best news coverage in town. Write letters to your political representatives who are always concerned about getting your vote. One or two letters may not sway a politician beholden to corporate contributions, but an avalanche of letters and calls can often make a difference in their voting record. In politics, it is a sad but unalterable fact that no one can get elected to office without telling lies. In America today, it appears no one can be elected at the national level by telling the truth, as witnessed by the failed campaigns of Ron Paul and Ross Perot. So the intelligent voter must disregard what any office seeker may say. Merely watch what they do, how they vote. If they vote to your satisfaction, then vote them back into office. If not, vote them out and try someone new, regardless of party politics. This is not a revolutionary idea. It is the way the system is supposed to work. America must move away from the political party system. Political ideologies have exerted a devolutionary influence on us. As internet blogger Paul Rosenberg explains, they make us harsher, angrier, easier to manipulate, and almost impossible to reason with. In almost every way that can be examined, they're bad for us, he wrote. The great problem is that people think they're required to have political stances. This is a tremendously damaging and false belief, but the Western world is currently addicted to it. In our time, politics is almighty. The truth, however, is that we are more than capable of examining the world and coming to conclusions without the mental partnership of a political ideology. In other words, a free and thinking person should not have to declare him or herself a Democrat or a Republican when expressing political opinions. In fact, more and more people are realizing that the two parties are simply two wings of America's one and only political entity, the War Party. Both Democrats and Republicans, which have now split into the more correct labels of liberals and conservatives, allow heated debates over topics such as same-sex marriage, abortion, and gun control. But when it comes to foreign policy, and particularly issues involving the corporations, the banks, or the military, there is no difference between the two parties. Rosenberg noted that once the political process is completed and laws are passed, people have a binary choice: either obey or be punished. At the end of every political process are armed men, violently enforcing it. That's barbaric, and it's ugly, he noted. The truth is that we really don't need those embittering ideologies, and if we ever really did need them, we've outgrown them. As best I can see it, the truth is that political ideologies make people consistently barbaric and ugly. They make them worse. Our lives would be improved if we dropped them. For a clear illustration of how a public nonviolent revolution might succeed, one need only look at the tiny island nation of Iceland. Since 2008, the corporate mass media in America has provided lavish coverage of the American financial meltdown, the Arab Springs in Egypt and Syria, the Occupy movement, and the Sunday morning talking heads go on and on about secretive organizations such as the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Affairs preaching financial austerity. But rarely mentioned are events in Iceland, which may provide a blueprint to regaining popular control over a government and financial system. When the financial meltdown of 2008 began, the primary banks in Iceland were nationalized, and it was decided not to pay the debts created by Great Britain and Holland's questionable policies. In two separate referendums, Icelandic citizens voted that Iceland should not have to repay foreign creditors the money they lost when Icelandic banks defaulted. Elections were held and the entire government was replaced. The new regime proposed to repay the debts over a period of 15 years at the low interest rate of 5.5%. In 2010, after public demonstrations, the government initiated an investigation, and many high-level bankers and executives were arrested for their part in the financial crisis. many soon left the country. A new constitution based on the Danish constitution was written, and a constitutional assembly called, composed of candidates whose only qualifications were that they were adults and had the support of 30 persons. Many notable economists hailed the move. Columbia University economics professor and Nobel Prize winner Joseph Stiglitz wrote, "Iceland did the right thing by making sure its payment systems continued to function while creditors, not the taxpayers, shouldered the losses of the banks." Paul Krugman of the New York Times agreed, writing, "In a nutshell, Ireland has been orthodox and responsible, guaranteeing all debts, engaging in savage austerity to try to pay for the cost of those guarantees, and, of course, staying on the euro. Iceland has been heterodox. Capital controls, large devaluation, and a lot of debt restructuring." Notice that wonderful line from the IMF above about how private sector bankruptcies have led to a marked decline in external debt. Bankrupting yourself to recovery. Seriously. And guess what? Heterodoxy is working a whole lot better than orthodoxy. Today, despite some setbacks, Iceland's economy appears strong and unemployment is much lower than it is in Ireland, Greece, or Portugal. Iceland's ordeal exemplifies the conundrum facing America. You can have the privatization of banks and other businesses and risk corruption and monopolies, or you can have centralized government control that also might not work for the benefit of the public. Yet questions remain as to why the Iceland experience was not widely or clearly presented in the corporate mass media. A contributor to CNN's iReport asked, "Have we been informed of this through the media? Has any political program in radio or TV commented on this? No. The Icelandic people have been able to show that there is a way to beat the system and have given a democracy lesson to the world." One basic problem in America is that more people are voting for a living than working for a living. One 2010 study showed that 60% of Americans were receiving more in government benefits than they paid in taxes. This number, of course, includes government pensions, Social Security, and Medicare payments that come from contributions made during a person's lifetime and are correctly termed entitlements. These people earned this money. Yet, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce, almost 47 million Americans received food stamps, though actually most now receive government-issued debit cards called electronic benefit transfers, EBTs, and another 5.6 million receive unemployment insurance. According to U.S. Census Bureau statistics released in mid-2014, almost 110 million Americans, more than one-third of the total population, were living on some form of government assistance. This number included more than 51 million receiving food stamps and 83 million collecting Medicaid, with some collecting from more than one program, and does not reflect the more than 5 million persons receiving government retirement benefits. Consider that this same Census Bureau reported that the number of full-time private sector workers, in other words, those Americans who got up and went to a job every morning, numbered only 86.4 million. Of a total of 103 million full-time, year-round workers, almost 17 million worked for the government. This includes 12.5 million who worked for state and local governments, and 4 million federal employees, all of whom are paid by tax money from the public treasury. It doesn't take a math whiz to realize that a nation with only 86 million full-time private sector workers cannot sustain 110 million living off government benefits. A collapse appears imminent. Such statistics support the words of the French historian Alexis de Tocqueville, who, after traveling in the U.S. in the early 1800s, wrote, "The American Republic will endure until the day Congress discovers that it can bribe the public with the public's money." Anyone who has ever done his own taxes realizes that he cannot pay out more money than he has received for very long. This is why a growing number of citizens believe that people receiving government subsistence, other than entitlements earned by years of work, should not be able to vote. They see this as a clear conflict of interest, as a welfare recipient's vote will always go to whoever promises them the most from public funds. Some welfare critics believe an application for government benefits should be a voluntary renunciation of the right to vote. Alfred W. Evans, in a November 18, 2010 letter to the editor of the Waco, Texas Tribune-Herald, reflected the views of many who wish to change the current American system when he wrote, "Put me in charge of food stamps. I'd get rid of Lone Star cards. No cash for ding-dongs or ho-hos, just money for 50-pound bags of rice and beans, blocks of cheese, and all the powdered milk you can haul away. If you want steak and frozen pizza, then get a job." "Put me in charge of Medicaid. The first thing I'd do is to get women Norplant birth control implants or tubal ligations. Then we'll test recipients for drugs, alcohol, and nicotine, and document all tattoos and piercings. If you want to reproduce and use drugs, alcohol, smoke, or get tats and piercings, then get a job. Put me in charge of government housing. Ever live in a military barracks? You will maintain your property in a clean and good state of repair. Your home will be subject to inspections any time, and possessions will be inventoried. If you want a plasma TV or an Xbox 360, then get a job and your own place. In addition, you will either present a check stub from a job each week, or you will report to a government job. It may be cleaning the roadways of trash, painting and repairing public housing, whatever we find for you. We will sell your 22-inch rims and low-profile tires and your blasting stereo and speakers and put that money toward the common good. Before you write that I violated someone's rights, realize that all of the above is voluntary. If you want our money, accept our rules. Before you say that this would be demeaning and ruin their self-esteem, consider that it wasn't that long ago that taking someone else's money for doing absolutely nothing was demeaning and lowered self-esteem. If we are expected to pay for other people's mistakes, we should at least attempt to make them learn from their bad choices. The current system rewards them for continuing to make bad choices. The biggest roadblock to making positive changes in America comes from the fact that such changes will require a change of laws, which in turn means congressional action. Yet this comes at a time when polls show the lowest public opinion of that body as a consequence of the polarization of the political parties. No national lawmaker seems capable of solving public issues through rational, thoughtful debate and compromise. All national politicians can talk about today is democracy. We have to defend democracy, save democracy, and bring democracy to people in foreign lands. Citizens fail to understand that the definition of democracy is simply rule by the majority, and the clearest example of democracy in action is a lynch mob. The Founding Fathers did not leave us a pure democracy. They created a democratic republic ruled by laws and checks and balances. Only after a fair trial, complete with legal representation, a jury of peers, and the opportunity to challenge the witnesses and evidence offered by the prosecution, can a defendant be found guilty and lynched. The wealthy elite today constantly extol the benefits of democracy and majority rule because they easily manage the masses by their ownership of a mere handful of transnational media corporations. A few critics are allowed to host alternative talk shows and websites to give the impression of First Amendment freedom. The globalists don't mind, for they still control the masses through ownership of the corporate media, and after all, majority rules. And few realize that the media control and the polarization taking place today has been the conscious agenda of the globalists, who consider the United States as a not-so-profitable branch of the world economy they seek to control. It is time for each thoughtful and concerned citizen to apply his or her own talents to solving the problems of America. It is too late to correct the abuses and excesses of the federal government, especially considering the problematic use of computer voting machines, which have proven to be so susceptible to hacking and manipulation, and the increasing control of Congress by corporations and special interests. So any meaningful change must begin at the personal level and work upward through local governments. With the help of neighbors and like-minded citizens, local city councils, county commissioners, and school boards should be packed with persons both aware of and concerned with the issues involved in serving and protecting the general public. Local leaders answerable to the community could turn the tide of an overreaching corporate-controlled federal bureaucracy and better manage local services. The primary point is that each individual must begin to take personal responsibility for himself and his family. Robert David Steele reminds us that there is a wealth of open source material to guide the individual truly seeking knowledge in whatever field, whether it is how to start a business or how to raise chickens. The time for trusting a corporate-run government to take care of every need has passed. A 2014 Pennsylvania case is one example of successful prevention of overreach from government bureaucrats. In that case, Sheriff Carl Nace refused to hand over the names and addresses of concealed weapon carriers to three county auditors who claimed they needed them to properly audit the sheriff's office. Nace said such a request was unwarranted for audit needs and conflicted with the statute making it a felony to disclose the names. The auditors sued the sheriff, but the judge sided with Sheriff Nace and dismissed the lawsuit. The Oath Keepers Organization, the Perry County Commissioners, the Pennsylvania Sheriff's Association, the Prince Law Firm, and a large number of Pennsylvania residents supported Sheriff Nace. Sheriffs have a unique role in law enforcement. Unlike their counterpart, the police chief, they are elected by the people. That fact makes them accountable to the people. Emphasis in the original. It forms a special bond of trust between the sheriff and his constituents, notes Robert Hayes with Elias Alias on the Oath Keepers website. Sheriff Nace has decided to do what is right. He is honoring his oath to the people as required by the Constitution. Andrew Martin, editor of Oneness Publishing and author of the 2011 book, One, A Survival Guide for the Future, noted, "For the most part, we live in a state of separation. We create thoughts and scenarios in our minds that do not represent reality. We create these realities that go toward deluding ourselves. In this world of constant struggle, we suffer, causing ourselves pain, frustration, and isolation. To live free and enlightened is to release ourselves from these self-inflicted negative states of mind. We are free to do this at any time we choose. It is merely a matter of choice." Unlike Sheriff Nace, most people feel impotent to stand against the totalitarianism of big government and the police state. "I'm only one person. What can I do about all this?" is a common refrain. Taking charge of one's own power and destiny may seem like a daunting challenge, but recent scientific breakthroughs support the idea that each individual has more capacity to change her reality than has been conditioned into her by education and religious authorities. Today, it is becoming known that individuals can effect change within themselves by altering their thinking and emotions. Human DNA can be reprogrammed through words and emotions without cutting and replacing genes. Apparently, human DNA is a biological internet and superior in many aspects to the artificial one, according to German authors Grzegorz Fossar and Franz Bludorf. Writing on the Wake Up World website, recent research directly or indirectly claims to explain phenomena such as clairvoyance, intuition, spontaneous and remote acts of healing, self-healing, affirmation techniques, unusual light, auras around people, the mind's influence on weather patterns, and much more, they wrote. Esoteric and spiritual teachers have known for ages that our body is programmable by language, words, and thought. This has now been scientifically proven and explained, wrote Fossar and Bludorf. Today, more and more children are being born with access to such DNA consciousness. They exhibit telepathic and clairvoyant abilities and develop a group consciousness. Researchers think that if humans with full individuality would regain group consciousness, they would have a godlike power to create, alter, and shape things on Earth, and humanity is collectively moving toward such a group consciousness of the new kind, wrote Fossar and Bludorf. The belief that humans can alter their emotions and physical body through sheer willpower was also supported by the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles, by former medical school professor and research scientist Dr. Bruce H. Lipton. Termed groundbreaking by critics, Lipton's book demonstrates how human cells receive and process information. The work of Lipton and other scientists shows that human DNA is controlled not through biology, but through energetic signals from outside the cell, including a person's negative and positive thoughts. This means the physical body can be altered by changing the person's thoughts and emotions. This is where science and spirituality begin to blend, according to Dr. Andrew Newberg, a professor of radiology, psychology, and religious studies at the University of Pennsylvania and co-founder of its Center for Spirituality in the Mind. A large body of science shows a positive impact of religion on health. The way the brain works is so compatible with religion and spirituality that we're going to be enmeshed in both for a long time. But such advances in thought, perception, and the ability to alter perceptions leading to alterations in one's physiology must be based on truth. Those who follow the teaching of the Bible should notice that no fewer than three times in the New Testament, Jesus tells his disciples that all sins may be forgiven, even blasphemy against him. Matthew chapter 12, verse 31. Mark chapter 3, verses 28 to 29. Luke chapter 12, verse 10. But the one sin that can never be forgiven is blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. The definition of the Holy Spirit is found in John chapter 15, verse 26, Living Bible. But I will send you the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, the source of all truth. The solution to most of the world's problems may be found in the Spirit of Truth. Truth is eternal. The whole universe is truth. It simply exists. Galaxies, suns, and planets just exist. Animals can love or hate, but they cannot practice deceit. Only humanity, with our free will, can choose to be deceitful. Only humans can speak untruths when they know better. So to speak against the Holy Spirit is to distort, deform, or deny truth. This should be seriously considered by those religious fundamentalists who have allowed truth to be distorted and misused in America, who have blindly followed their leaders into a society geared toward war, death, and debilitation. Since the Vietnam War, with government promises of light at the end of the tunnel, to the Bush administration's warning that Saddam Hussein was within weeks of striking with weapons of mass destruction, the American public has been pushed from pillar to post by government lies, half-truths, and demagoguery. In 2014, President Barack Obama declared success in Iraq by withdrawing U.S. troops, only to send soldiers back mid-year to protect American personnel as radical Sunni jihadist insurgents of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, al-Sham, ISIS, overran many key areas. A June 2014 Gallup poll indicated that the majority of respondents viewed Obama's decision to send 300 Special Forces advisors to Iraq as only a preliminary step in sending larger numbers of troops back to that strife-ridden country. The mid-2014 poll, which gave Obama a 6-year low approval rating on foreign policy, showed that while most respondents thought the insurgents would conquer Iraq if the U.S. didn't return, a majority indicated they thought it more important to keep our troops out of Iraq than to stop the fighting. But as witnessed by the 2003 invasion of Iraq, which was presaged by some of the largest anti-war demonstrations ever recorded, the will of the majority doesn't seem to alter decisions made by the corporate globalists that run the American empire. A feeling of impotence and cynicism in the face of globalist control was reflected in a mid-2014 Gallup poll, which gauged Americans' eroding confidence in their leaders. Public confidence in all three branches of the federal government had fallen to record lows. Only 29% expressed confidence in the presidency, down 7% from a previous rating of 36%. Discontent was also registered for the other two branches of government, with the Supreme Court gathering a 30% approval rating, while Congress remained in the single-digit column, with only 7% expressing confidence in that institution. The failures of centralized government aside, many feel it is long past time for the American people to cast off the blinders imposed on them by the corporate mass media and view the reality of their death-dealing society to truly move toward a future that values life over death. Be warned. This could lead to a new and shocking worldview, as many may learn that the much-discussed New World Order is simply the Old World Order. The means of exercising power are the same, only the technologies have changed. The Caesars and kings of yesterday became the robber barons of the 19th and 20th centuries, who in turn have become the corporate owners of today. These self-styled globalists believe themselves to be more enlightened, entitled by heritage, and therefore more worthy than others to rule the world. And through their ownership of the multinational corporations that control governments and even our food, water, and pharmaceuticals, they are drawing immense profits, even as they poison and sicken whole populations in their pursuit of depopulation. The globalist-instigated American culture of death must be turned into a culture of life. This is Paul Bamer. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Population Control: How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us by Jim Marsh. This program was produced by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer, Katie Ostroka. Copyright 2015 by Jim Marsh. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.